I kind of almost like that. Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 329. And that makes it Mula Madhyamaka Karika Part 2, in which we will continue reading Mula Madhyamaka Karika, which was Nagarjuna's magnum opus from about 150 AD in early Mahayana. And he's basically known as the founder or originator of the Madhyamaka, or middle way school, if you will, of Mahayana Buddhism. And if you'd like to start at the beginning, I do a brief introduction to him and what we're reading in part one. So here's the playlist for Mula Madhyamaka Karika. And otherwise, without any further ado, I will pick up where we left off last time. Chapter 3. Examination of the senses. 1. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and mind are the 6 sense faculties. Their spheres are the visible objects, etc. dot 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 dot. Okay, Garfield, what's happening here? Did Nagarjuna say the Sanskrit equivalent of etc., and are these 4 dots his or yours? And if so, I'll just keep reading. It's the frustrations of not reading things in their original language and having to rely on translators. What's with the dots here? Was there more? Was he going to say eyes, nose, mouth, but you thought, we'll leave that out. People can figure it out on their own. Anyway, okay, sorry. 2. So this is chapter 3, verse 2. That very seeing does not see itself at all. Now you know where Alan Watts got that whole thing. He was often quoted in Nagarjuna. I'll keep reading. How can something that cannot see itself see another? I mean, if you're actually asking me, then I could point out how silly that question is, but I'll just keep reading. If we're speaking abstractly, then please clarify in what way you're abstractly asking this question that doesn't actually make sense, because your eye can see everything except for itself. So to say, how can it see everything else if it cannot see itself, is just a misunderstanding of, I know he's an intelligent guy, so I'll just move along with it. All right. If you saw the previous episode, you know a little bit of my initial response to his sophistry. Verse 3. The example of fire cannot elucidate seeing, along with the moved and not moved and motion. That has been answered. Has it? 4. When there is not even the slightest non-seeing seer, how could it make sense to say that seeing sees? If you were going for something koan-ish, then I'll give it a B minus, but I don't think you were, so... Verse 5. Seeing itself does not see. What? Non-seeing itself. Oh, seeing. The seeing does not see. Okay. Yeah, subjects do predicates, not predicates. Non-seeing itself does not see. Through seeing itself, the clear analysis of the seer is understood. Who is the seer? 6. Without detachment from vision, there is no seer. Nor is there a seer detached from it. Right. I like it, but if there is no seer, how can there be seeing or the seen? These are like proto-koans, maybe? 7. Just as the birth of a son is said to occur in dependence on the mother and father, so consciousness is said to arise in dependence on the I and material form. Figuratively speaking, naturally, people who are born blind are also conscious, but perhaps they have other senses, but there are notable exceptions. I'll just keep reading. 8. From the non-existence of seeing and the seen, it follows that, did we establish that these are non-existent? I guess he did. We'll just go along for the ride. I think I've given up trying to follow what he's saying already on just after a few pages. I'm like, well, I guess we're reading this. But anyway, okay. 8. From the non-existence of seeing and the seen, it follows that the other four faculties of knowledge do not exist. And all the aggregates, etc., are the same way. I can understand how he, like, won the debates with the Hindus back in the 2nd century, where they're like, so what do you have to say in response to what he just said? And they're, like, talking amongst each of themselves, like, could he please repeat what he just said? You know, like, we're slower. I'm not making fun of them. I'm relating with them. 9. Like the seen, the heard, the smelled, the tasted, and the touched, the hearer, sound, etc., and consciousness should be understood. That's the end of the chapter. Okay. Chapter 4. Examination of the aggregates. 1. Apart from the cause of form, form cannot be conceived. Apart from form, the cause of form is not seen. I can a little bit. Like the thing that calls to mind for me, I hope you don't mind me sometimes talking and reflecting and sharing thoughts. Some people are just like, stick to the reading. This is a reading channel. But anyway, perhaps someone else out there is. Surely there's an AI you can program to just recite this if you want that. But anyway, sadly, we're human here on this channel. I'm being facetious when I say sadly. What's my point? My point is you can see the Big Bang, presumably. The initial expansion. I mean, aside from the microwave radiation, which is what, a few seconds after the Big Bang, it was a few hundred thousand years. Well, anyway, the point is, the movement itself moved out and turned into a sort of spiraling. So the motion of the Earth, the motion of the sun around the galaxy, but more importantly, the motion of the Earth. When the sun rises, when you watch the sun set, what you're watching is the motion put in motion 14 billion years ago. I mean, at least, right? So, yeah, the cause of form can be seen when you look at the form, if seeing exists, which apparently it doesn't, but we'll just let that slide for now. 2. If apart from the cause of form, that's probably not what he meant, but that's what it made me think of. If apart from the cause of form, there were form. Form would be without cause. That made logical sense. But nowhere is there an effect without a cause, because of the definition of cause and effect. Okay. It's good getting into linguistics and definitions of words. 3. If apart from form, there were a cause of form, it would be a cause without an effect. False? I'll just keep reading. I mean, if something happens and then nothing results from it, is it a cause at all? Or is it just a thing that happened? And surely, can anything happen and cause nothing and have no effect? Even a butterfly. I'll just keep reading. But there are no causes without effects. Yeah, because cause and effect. If, without then, it's like, what? If we go to the store, yes, you were in the middle of a sentence. No, I was just saying if we go to the store. No, you have to finish that sentence, because so cause necessitates effects to justify it being called cause, at least in English. Maybe in Sanskrit it's different. I'll keep reading. 4. When form exists, a cause of the arising of form is not tenable. Perhaps. When form is non-existent, a cause of the arising of form is not tenable. Oh. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. We'll just keep going. 5. Form itself without a cause is not possible or tenable. Yeah, sure, we'll roll with that. Yeah. Therefore, think about form, but do not construct theories about form. I'll construct theories about form if I'd like, Mr. Juno. Nagar, first name Nagar. Never mind. 6. The assertion that the effect and cause are similar is not acceptable. Okay. The assertion, I mean, you can not accept something, but to declare something unacceptable, I mean, for whom? You know, I don't know. Okay. The assertion that they are not similar is also not acceptable. Seven, feelings, discriminations, and dispositions, and consciousness, and all such things should be thought of in the same way as material form. The social sciences are sciences. The test tubes are abstract metaphorical test tubes, but test tubes nonetheless. Okay, I grok that. 8. Not grok. That, don't let him have that word. Can we stick to Heinlein's definition, please? 8. When an analysis is made through emptiness, if someone were to offer a reply, that reply would fail, since it will presuppose exactly what is to be proven. Is that the circular argumentation? Begging the question? That's what begging the question used to mean. Now it's come to mean, like, makes you think of a question, but you can Google begs the question and be a little more intelligent than everybody on YouTube, except for me, of course. No. We can be equals, that's fine. 9. When an explanation is made through emptiness, whoever would find fault with it will find no fault. I've noticed that. Since the criticism will presuppose exactly what is to be proven. Yeah, that's why the conversations kind of grind to a halt when the mercury swallows itself up. And, okay. I'm enjoying it. I'm not really able to make solid sense out of most of it, but I think that was kind of the point, as mentioned in the previous episode. So I hope you're having fun. If not, then it is what it is. Chapter 5. Examination of elements. I mean, the periodic chart? No. 1. Prior to a characteristic of space, there is not the slightest space. If it arose prior to the characteristic, then it would absurdly arise without a characteristic. Okay. 2. A thing without a characteristic has never existed. Unprovable, but continue. If nothing lacks a characteristic, where do characteristics come to be? The goof, the characteristic farm store. 3. Neither in the uncharacterized nor in the characterized does a characteristic arise. Nor does it arise in something different from these two. I mean, this is kind of wordplay, but I mean, I feel like it's setting up for deeper, more profound ideas, but yeah, a lot of this is just the definition of that word is this. Therefore, if it's not that definition, then it's not that word. Where does the word come from? What are words for when no one listens anymore? Missing persons. I used to be in a band called Fall from Eden that opened for missing persons. Now, the thing I left out of that statement was I was no longer in the band when they did that. But anyway, never mind. I'll keep reading. 4. If characteristics do not appear, then it is not tenable to posit the characterized object. If the characterized object is not posited, there will be no characteristic either. 5. From this it follows that there is no characterized and no existing characteristic, nor is there any entity other than the characterized and the characteristic. Okay. 6. If there is no existent thing, of what will there be non-existence? I kind of almost like that. If there is no existent thing, then what's missing? I mean, everything, but well, every what? I mean, if there's no one there to notice that there's no one there, then never mind, I'll just keep reading. Apart from existent and non-existent things, who knows existence and non-existence? You have to exist to say, that exists, I guess. 7. Therefore, space is not an entity. It is not a non-entity. Bela Lugosi's undead. No. Not characterized, not without character. The same is true of the other 5 elements, which... space, element, Akasha. Got it. 8. Fools and reificationists who perceive the existence and non-existence of objects do not see the pacification of objectification. Okay. Pacify my objectification. My objectification. Isn't that Madonna, the early 90s? Chapter 6. Examination of desire and the desirous. Let's see where this goes. 1. if prior to desire, and without desire, there were a desirous one, desire would depend on him. Him? Desire would exist when there is a desirous one. Okay? Two, were there no desirous one, moreover, where would desire occur? Point to the part of the doll where the desire occurs. No. Whether or not, what? Whether or not desire or the desirous one exist, the analysis would be the same. Three, desire and the desirous one cannot arise together. In that case, desire and the desirous one would not be mutually contingent. You lost me, but I'll keep reading. Four, in identity, there is no simultaneity. I mean, I'm willing to accept that Nagarjuna is just vastly more intelligent than I am, and there's no way that my feeble little mind will ever be able to comprehend. Rather than just being like, oh, I don't understand this, therefore it doesn't make sense. You know, I'll just say, okay, all right. I just don't grasp it, perhaps. I'll give you that for the moment. I'll take it back in a little bit later. Okay, a thing is not simultaneous with itself. Yes, it is. I'm just kidding. But if there is difference, then how would there be simultaneity? You tell me. I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. This is the, of all the things we read on Buddhist Books Podcast, this is the one that causes me to have this reaction. Five, if in identity there were simultaneity, the sound of that blender is going to end when the timer reaches zero. Oh, never mind, we're already there. If in identity, okay, where were we? Five. If in identity there were simultaneity, which means what exactly? But anyway, okay, then, you got the if then, cause and effect? No. Then it would occur without association. If in difference, this is a little like reading Sonnet 1, but more frustrating. If in difference there were simultaneity, it could occur without association. Six. If in difference there were simultaneity, how could desire and the desirous one, being different, be established? If they were, they would be simultaneous. Okay. Seven. If desire and the desirous one are established as different, then why would you think that they are simultaneous? I don't know, Nagarjuna. I'm sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about, even a little. So I guess I don't think that they're simultaneous, because I don't think anything at all about anything that you've said so far today. Eight, since difference is not established, if you assert that they are simultaneous, since they are established as simultaneous, do you also assert that they are different? No? I don't know. I'm sorry. What are you saying? Nine. Since nothing different has been established, if one is asserting simultaneity, which different thing do you want to say is simultaneous? I don't know. 10. Thus desire and the desirous one cannot be established as simultaneous Oh, the person who's desiring. Oh, that's why it's he. Okay, I get it. I mean, from the male centric. Never mind. Thus, desire and the desirous one cannot be established as simultaneous or not simultaneous. So, like desire. The desire and the desire. Okay. So, does the desire come into being at the same point as the one who is desirous? Do you mean when the person becomes desirous, the desire comes into being? Or desire, I mean, okay, I'll just... So, like desire, nothing whatever can be established as either as simultaneous or as non-simultaneous. If any of that made sense, then it makes sense universally and applies to everything. No and no? I don't know. Am I allowed to say that? Chapter 7. Buddha makes more sense than Nagarjuna. I'm just going to go on record here and say that. The guy who wrote the Dhammadaka. I mean, what is this? Chapter 7. Examination of the conditioned. 1. If arising were produced... then it would also have the three characteristics. Can you give me a footnote where you tell me what the three characteristics are? If arising is not produced, how could the characteristics of the produced exist? I don't know, man. 2. If the three arising, etc., was the etc. where you were going to tell me what the three were? Because could you, instead of that, tell me what the three are so we can have just a little more context for what we're talking about here? Please, Mr. Garfield? If the three arising, etc., are separate, they cannot function as the characteristics of the produced. But how could they be joined in one thing simultaneously? 3. Here we go. If arising, abiding, and ceasing, I should have known. Okay. The Brahma, Shiva, or not in that order, Vishnu, you know what I mean, creating... preserving, destroying. Those are the three conditions. Okay, if the three conditions happen simultaneously, then nobody would be talking about it because it would have been destroyed the moment it was created, right? And how could it have been preserved if it was destroyed at the same moment? Oh, okay. I'm sensing a little bit of sense that the three characteristics, if those are the three characteristics, cannot be simultaneous. Although I would venture to say that, yes, they can. But I'm not here to espouse my own philosophy counter to... I'm not in a position to criticize Nagarjuna's points. I can't quite comprehend them. That's my only criticism, is that... what do you... I mean, it's English, so we could always just say that. Yeah, if this were Sanskrit 2,000 years ago, it'd make perfect sense. But it's English today, so it doesn't. Garfield. The translator's name is Garfield. I'm not just randomly blurting out the name of a cartoon cat. Where were we? Okay, if arising, abiding, and ceasing have characteristics other than those of the produced, there would be an infinite regress. Would there be? If they don't, they would not be produced. Well, then that must not make any sense. Are you arguing for that we're all in the Matrix or what? The arising of arising only gives rise. Okay, I like it. to the basic arising. Oh, I liked it better before that second line. The arising of the basic arising gives rise to arising. I kind of like, okay, chapter 7, verse 4. I'm going to read it again. It's short. The arising of arising only gives rise to the basic arising. The arising of the basic arising gives rise to arising. Okay. 5. If, as you say, the arising of arising gives rise to the basic arising, how, according to you, who are you talking to, does this not arisen from the basic arising give rise to that? Who created the creator? Six, if, as you say, that which is arisen from basic arising gives rise to the basis, how does that non-arisen basis give rise to it? Seven, if this non-arisen could give rise to that, then, as you wish, it will give rise to that which is arising. 8. Just as a butter lamp illuminates itself as well as others, so arising gives rise to itself and to other arisen things. Don't put it under a bushel basket. Never mind. 10. If the arising butter lamp does not reach darkness, how could that arising butter lamp have cleared the darkness? Eleven. If the illumination of darkness occurs without the butter lamp reaching darkness, all of the darkness in the world should be illuminated by the butter lamp, or... 12. If, when it is illuminated, the butter lamp illuminates itself and others, should darkness should, without a doubt, conceal itself and others. Is butter flammable?
I've heard of... it's like the wax. The wax is made from ghee or something, right? You can't make wax from ghee, but
I don't know how. 13. How could this arising, being non-arisen, give rise to itself? And if it is arisen from another, having arisen, what is the need for another arising? 14. The arisen, the non-arisen, and that which is arising do not arise in any way at all.
False?
Thus they should be understood just like the gone, the not gone, and the going. I have a channel called Going, Going, Gone, if anybody's interested. Reminded me of that. 15. When there is arising, but not yet, that which is arising, how can we say that that which is arising depends on this arising? 16. Whatever is dependently arisen, such a thing is essentially peaceful. Therefore, that which is arising and arising itself are themselves peaceful.
Well, that's good. Although I can think of some things that... Never mind.
17. If a non-arisen entity anywhere exists, that entity would have to arise. But if it were non-existent, what could arise? Eighteen. If this arising gave rise to that which is arising. By means of what arising does that arising arise? Right. 19. If another arising gives rise to this one, there would be an infinite regress. If something non-arisen is arisen, then all things could arise in this way. Okay, I think I kind of get what he means by infinite regress now, perhaps. It's, who created God? Oh, the God that created God. Well, who created that one? The one who created that one. Well, who created that one? The one who created that one. And then that question and answer repeats forever, right? Something like that. I mean, if you were the one who arises and the one who's doing the arising. Never mind. 19. If another arising gives rise to this one, there would be an infinite regress. I think I've read that already. 20. Neither an existent nor a non-existent can be properly said to arise. Depends on what you mean by existent and non-existent. There's a little bit of shades of some of the stuff that Ibn Arabi talks about in this. Existent and entities are being, you know, existence is given over to an entity when the entity comes into existence. But never mind. I don't know if that's the same as what they're talking about. As it is taught before with, quote, for neither an existent nor a non-existent, end quote. That seems like straight out of Meccan Revelations, but 21. The arising of a ceasing thing is not tenable, but I can think of examples of that. But to say that it is not ceasing is not tenable for anything. 22. A static existent does not endure. A non-static existent does not endure. I mean, nothing endures, to be fair, except for change itself. And never mind. Stasis does not endure. What non-arisen can endure? Well, if it's non-arisen, then it... never mind. 23. The endurance of a ceasing entity is not tenable. Well, yeah, that's by definition. But to say that it is not ceasing is not tenable for anything. Yeah. 24. Inasmuch as the nature of all things is aging and death, without aging and death, what existence can endure? With a TS. What existence can endure? I don't know. In this universe? Perhaps nothing. 25. Stasis cannot endure through itself, or through another stasis, just as arising cannot arise from itself or from another arising. Okay. 26. The ceasing of what has ceased does not happen. Okay. What has not yet ceased does not cease. But it will later. Nor does that which is ceasing. False. What non-arisen can cease? Well, yeah, non-arisen doesn't cease because it has to arise before it can cease. It's like that baby that hasn't been born or conceived hasn't died yet, unless you're talking reincarnation and previous lives and stuff. 27. The cessation of what is static is not tenable. What? Oh, well, yeah, if it were static. Nor is the cessation of something not static tenable. That part didn't make sense. If it's not static, then it can... What is tenable? What do you mean tenable? What are you talking about? 28. Being static does not cease. Ow! No, not that kind of static.
through being static itself. Well, that was a whole sentence. Okay. Being static does not cease through being static itself. Nor does being static cease through another instance of being static. 29. When the arising of any entity is not tenable, then the cessation of any entity is not tenable. Sometimes, like, I could score these on a you know, scale of 1 to 10 of, like, how much intuitive sense does it seem to make? But, again, either this doesn't make sense or I'm an idiot and he's a genius. And I'm sure there's probably plenty of people that would assert that that's the case. Okay, I'll accept that. But there's a point where someone's so brilliant that what they're saying doesn't make sense. Or the perhaps words, and again, English translation, even worse. I wonder if even the original Sanskrit was sufficient to capture the brilliance of these ideas, assuming they were brilliant, which, since Nagarjuna is very well respected, if not, like, worshipped in some contexts. I mean, at least from what the AI-generated YouTube videos lead me to believe, there's people, like, seriously, like, praying to Nagarjuna for... Never mind, I'll just... 30. For an existent thing, cessation is not tenable. A single thing being an entity and a non-entity is not tenable. 31. Moreover, for a non-entity, cessation would be untenable. Yeah. Just as a second beheading cannot be performed. Ha! That was funny. That was funny, and it kind of brought it down to my dumb level where I could kind of understand a little bit what you were saying just for a moment. Thank you, Nagarjuna. Thank you. More of this, please. A second beheading cannot be performed. I mean, not on the same head anyway. 32. Cessation does not cease by means of itself. Cessation itself does not cease? We found something that doesn't cease, but wonders never cease. Oh, wonders too. Never mind. Nor does it cease by means of another. Just as arising cannot arise from itself or from another arising. Yeah, because arising is not a noun. Or is it? No, it is a noun. Never mind. What is it when you nounize a verb? So, the act of jumping cannot jump, because that doesn't make grammatic sense, right? I mean, is he saying something deeper than that? 33, since arising, ceasing, and abiding are not established, there are no compounded things. Of all compounded things, if all compounded things are unestablished, how could the uncompounded be established? If this microphone were uncat, how could this microphone be cat? I won the argument, allow my religion to continue existing. 34. Like a dream, like an illusion, like a city of Gandharvas, so have arisen, abiding, and ceasing been explained. No, they haven't. Oh my God, Nagarjuna, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? I mean, I guess it's good. It's like those, you remember in the 90s there were those, like, things that supposedly if you looked at long enough a dragon would pop out and be three-dimensional, but you had to, like, look through it and let your eyes relax and all this. And I tried, probably there's a number of hours of if you added up all the amount of time that I spent staring at those darn things, not even a little bit, not once did an image appear in any of those things. And I started to, I mean, I didn't seriously believe it, but I started to like seriously entertain the notion that everybody was like, oh yeah, I see it. Oh, there's a dolphin over here too. Oh, and there's a fish. Oh, and the shark. And I'm like, is this an Emperor's New Clothes situation? Or is everybody pretending? I mean, they see the same thing they saw, so I guess, okay, I really just can't see it. And that's how I feel about Nagarjuna. So, yeah. If you want someone to explain Nagarjuna, go somewhere else. I mean, Alan Watts seems to take one or two lines and kind of go on his own trip with it, and I respect that. But, you know, listening to 18 hours of Alan Watts on repeat for years did not prepare me to actually read the English translation of Mula Madhya Maka Karika. Maybe it'll be better next time. And maybe by the time we finish reading this book, I'll be eating my words and saying, you know, in the early days of reading this, I didn't get it, but now I get it, and now I want to reread it. And, but I doubt it. So it's interesting to see how Nagarjuna fits or does not fit into the whole grand schema of things. But I've just from my peripheral glance into Madhyamaka, when I was reading about the evolution of all the different forms of Buddhism in preparation for making the notes, which eventually led to Buddhist Books Podcast, I did kind of get the sense that when people say profound sounding things that don't actually make sense and are paradoxical, and people call that Buddhism, that has nothing to do with any of Lord Buddha's teachings and has everything to do with Nagarjuna. And that seems to confirm this, the experience of reading this seems to confirm that, because Lord Buddha's teachings, which we can find here in the Tipitaka behind me, even though we've only read the discipline basket so far, but some of his teachings are introduced alongside the rules and the reason for the rules and this kind of thing. And they make sense. They make logical sense. They make intuitive sense. And I mean, there's some old-timey discrimination which rears its ugly head, which I can say that I have not, and I don't expect to find any of that in Nagarjuna's writings, other than the assumption that the person doing the desiring is male, but it's okay. That's very minor. Oh, and we ran out of... the disc is full. I hate it when that happens. So for the past, how long? A few minutes? The audio has been from the phone itself, so that's why the audio quality dropped. Just in time for the closing. I'll just do the closing now and delete some files on the computer so that I can record for longer than 57 minutes and 16 seconds next time. I started recording the audio before. Anyways, let's go ahead and close. Thank you for joining me today, for those of you who are still here. Next time it's going to be Padmasambhava, so that'll be nice to move out of this straining to make logical sense out of something that seems like it's supposed to be logical, and just diving into some poetry about things that don't make sense, aren't meant to make sense, and just sort of feel interesting and fun. That'll be next time. I'll go ahead and do the usual closing. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.